Pump up the volume on your parenting with Parent Pump Radio. Tune into something different that makes a difference. At Parent Pump Radio, instead of a ripple, we choose to create a splash. Get energized, get inspired, and get informed with how to parent in the new millennium. With your host and parent coach super guide, Jacqueline T.D. Nguyen.
Hi, this is Jacqueline T.D. Nguyen, and we're here to pump up your parenting skills, pump up your knowledge, and pump up your energy. Go to parentpumpradio.com and click on the pink box to see our new and archive show. Please leave your comments, questions, and topic suggestions on our Facebook page or our website. We're always trying to make our show better and bring you more information and more informative information. Our past show has been about talking to experts and getting their thoughts, advice, and insights on how to be better parents, what our kids are going through, and how we can help. Well, suddenly I realized that we were missing a component, the youth. So why not just go straight to our teens and the young adults and ask them what they're going through, how we can help, what we're doing right, what we can do better. Thank you for joining us on the new segment to our radio show called Teen to Parent Talk. I've gathered and will be gathering some amazing 18 to 23-year-olds who will not only be sharing with you what's going on with them, but also they're going to share how to help the parents. They're going to share about their insights, their advice, their tribulations, hopes, and dreams. But they're also going to be giving the same advice to our teens. We'll be talking to these young adults about everything from social media to substance abuse to mental illness to divorce to dating and sex and school. No stone will be unturned and no subject is too much or too little, and nothing will be censored. So my goal here is that these young adults will be bridging the gap between you and your kids to create the beautiful, harmonic, deep, and meaningful family you're working towards creating. On to our show. About 1 in 4 adults suffer from a diagnosable mental disorder in a given year, and 1 in 10 children aged 5 to 16 suffer from this mental health disorder that's diagnosable. And there's been an increase of 68% in the number of young people being admitted to hospital because of self-harm over the last 10 years. And these numbers are rising. The most common mental disorders are depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, PTSD, and OCD. Whether the parents or the child has the mental illness, everyone's affected in the families. Today, I want to talk about the mental illness and the isolation that it creates in the family, not only in the children, but maybe in the parents. I have 2 really special guests with me, and they're going to help provide some insights on this topic. The first is my special co-host. She's been here recently as our special expert guest. She began her journey in 2005 into the field of helping professionals as a volunteer for Free Arts for Abused Children. She now specializes in addiction and recovery work, complex trauma, and anxiety. She's a licensed MFT and registered art therapist. Her overall approach is grounded in humanistic philosophy. I'd like to welcome back Anna Perkle. Thank you for being here.
Hi, Jacqueline. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited about our topic today because I really want to help reduce the stigma that we have when we think about what is mental illness and reassure everybody that they are all indeed on the spectrum somewhere. So the people that we're going to be talking to are just giving their stories that are actually very common.
Thank you, Anna. Our special expert guest for today, he's currently a sophomore at the University of Pennsylvania. He previously attended Miracosa High School and is from the Manhattan Beach, South Bay area of California. He's currently studying cognitive science and is very interested in pursuing a potential career in clinical psychology, experimental psychology, or mental health policy. And he's currently involved in multiple mental wellness organizations at Penn and is also a bassoonist in the Penn Orchestra. Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce you to Brian Chow. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Jacqueline. Thank you so much for having me. I mean, it's a real honor to be on this show. And thank you, Anna, for reaching out to me. It really means a lot to be featured on something that's really special. And I think it's a dialogue that really has to happen. I think it's wonderful.
Well, thank you very much. So how are you adjusting to college?
It's been a journey so far. I mean, my first year was a little bit rough in terms of adjusting to the new environment. It was my first time living away from home. It was definitely difficult to find different ways to make new friends, finding ways to adjust to the classes, finding ways to kind of get involved in the student community. And there were definitely a lot of rough patches along the way, but I like to say that I'm kind of finding something that works for me right now, and things have gotten a little bit more comfortable as time's kind of gone along so far.
Good. Do you have any free time to enjoy?
I actually do. I mean, I've been trying to spend a lot of time just pursuing my personal hobbies, just trying to find a lot of time to just self-reflect, really think about what I'm doing right now, what I want to be doing with my life, just trying to think about different relationships that I have. I have a lot of free time that I really like to just use to spend to think about these kinds of things. So
good, good. Well, as I was reading the major that Ryan was going to, Anna's over here doing some pumping over here. She was excited that he's going into that. So what made you decide to get into the psychology, that arena?
It was actually really interesting. I've always been somewhat interested in psychology since I was really little, and there's a really long personal story to this, but I think the first thing that really got me interested in just learning about other people was the first time I actually really took a personality test, and I think that was when I was 12. I was going through some sort of identity crisis way back when, and there's a personal history to this, but I was just so intrigued in just learning more about myself and just learning that, wow, everybody has a personal story that they're able to share, and just learning about myself just from taking this test. I'm like, wow, like how can you learn so much about someone just from a simple questionnaire? And that's kind of what started the whole personal journey into all this. And then throughout high school, I tried to get involved in different experiences that got me exposed to learning more about this. I was a member of PACE, which is kind of like the student group that put on the different assemblies like Red Ribbon Week and a lot of the different wellness focused presentations. And I was also involved in a helpline back in when I was in high school. I just wanted to find as many ways I can get involved. And that was kind of how I was able to shape my interests over a period of time. When I got to college, I wasn't exactly sure if I wanted to pursue cognitive science, psychology, neuroscience, or one of those. But after kind of taking some classes and just figuring out where to go from here, I feel like I'm kind of settling down in terms of what I want to study. But once again, it's still up in the air. I still have to technically declare, which I'm hoping to do later this semester.
You mentioned that one of the reasons why you're getting into psychology is there's a background to it. So let's get into the topic today. Our topic is about mental illness and isolation and what happens when families are going through that. Mm-hmm. And you have it's unique, but not really, right? A lot of people are probably going through this. So it's common to have depression and anxiety and people go up and down through it. So we want to create awareness and take out the stigma that we can't talk about it. You talked about isolation when we were on the phone. So How would you define isolation?
Isolation. To me, it's something that's really complex, and it really depends on the individual who's experiencing it. I can really only tell about my story. For me, I feel like isolation is, on one hand, it's a great thing to be able to experience because it really allows you to think about what it is that you're going through, and it really allows you to introspect about a lot of things. But at the same time, it's also a really sad feeling that you don't really feel like you have a lot of people to be able to connect to. And you can be going through all these different things in your mind, but you can't really feel like you can communicate with those thoughts with other people. And I think that's something that really makes it unique. Just that realization that I'm going through this myself and that I have to find my own way to be able to deal with these different issues that I'm going through or learn different aspects of life and just being able to apply that to my own life so that I can best help myself.
How young were you when you first started feeling this isolation?
It's kind of hard to pinpoint an exact period of time, but I feel like the first time when it was really made evident to people around me was I think I was about 6 years old. I remember just when I was first grade, I would always kind of just sit by the pole by myself when I was at recess. I mean, I didn't really feel like I had a lot of friends that I could connect with because all of them were doing just like different activities. And I always felt like I was kind of just by myself. So I didn't really spend as much time just trying to get to know my peers, getting to have fun experiences with them on the playground. I just would sit by the pole. And that was something that my first grade teacher noticed, and that was something that my parents noticed, and that was kind of the first time people kind of realized that I was just alone, I guess.
Did you know any of your fellow students outside of school?
I did. I still knew a lot of people. I've had play dates. I've had friends. It was a really weird experience. Like, they were there, like, when I was in first grade. I just never went and took the initiative to actually spend time with them. And I'm still trying to figure out to this day why I did that, because it's kind of something that's still relevant today. You have all these different people around you who care about you, who really enjoy your company, but at the same time, you still get caught up in your own head and just feel really isolated, even though there's a lot of people around you. So to answer your question, I did have friends. It's just a really strange experience where I just didn't really feel like I could actually enjoy spending time with them. I just didn't really feel like they really understood who I was. So I just felt even more isolated whenever I'd spend time with them. And it's really strange. It's a really strange phenomenon that occurs.
So this is interesting. So. Even though physically he was around people, feeling wise, you didn't connect with them. It was like they weren't even really there in that way. Right? Is that
right?
Something?
I mean, something in the way of your being able to go out there and be with them, to play with them, to interact with them.
Yeah, in a way, I guess that's true. But I mean, at the same time, I don't really know what it was that was going on. And it's something that's really interesting to think about.
And it can be really complicated for children. All kinds of things can be happening in families and other things that will play a role in that. So it's not just the child. It's their entire environment.
Absolutely.
That will affect their ability to play on a playground.
Let's talk about the environment. How was home life?
So home life. So I was born in Bay Area and I moved down to Southern California when I was about 4 years old. It was just work stuff that my dad was doing and he ended up having to move down to Los Angeles for his career. I would say that home life for the most part seemed relatively stable for me, at least in the very beginning. One thing that I did notice was that my parents did fight a lot, even when I was very young. And that was something that kind of just stands out as a very salient set of memories for me. And I didn't really realize until later that this was kind of not normal. That, I mean, it was normal in a way, but in the same way, it was also not normal. It was kind of something that contributed towards stuff that happened later on in my parents' relationship. And that was something that kind of just stuck out to me. And a lot of the times I feel like I kind of just internalized that conflict. And I feel like a lot of times that still carries through today.
And children, quite often, when their parents are fighting, will internalize it and will actually translate it as being their fault, even. You know, gosh, if I were just a better kid or if I behaved differently, maybe they would stop fighting type of thing is a normal translation in a child's head when parents are fighting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
How did you cope with this feeling of isolation?
In the very beginning, I cried. I cried a lot when I was a little kid. Mm. I always just felt like there was something that I was doing wrong. Whenever I saw my parents upset, it just registered to me that, my parents are upset. I mean, they only ever really get upset when I'm doing something wrong. I didn't really have a way to see outside of that things weren't necessarily happening because of me. But when I was at that very young age, I mean, I feel like it's really hard for a kid to just kind of see outside of their own immediate bubble, I guess. Yeah. And after a period of time, I just started self-deprecating a lot of times. I feel like this kind of happened a little bit later, a few years later, like when I was around 6 years old, around the same time, just self-deprecating a lot, just being really negative about myself, putting myself down. Because I feel like when I was at that age, I had this very strange notion that if I was able to basically have the last word on myself, then my parents couldn't really do anything to affect me. And that was a really, I guess, hurtful habit that I got into. And it's something that's kind of still continued to this day. But it was kind of just a way for me to feel better about myself. Like, I was the one who would have control over myself at a very young age. I was the one who was basically able to make the final call in terms of making judgments about myself. And I remember, like, still to this day that when I was really little, my parents would start saying, like, stop being so negative, Brian. Like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this to yourself? Like, you're being a martyr or whatever. I mean, a lot of this didn't happen until later, but I just remember just like those conversations. Why are you being so negative? Like,
how was your schoolwork? I mean, did you still have good grades? Did school affect at all?
Yeah, I struggled in school up until third grade. That's kind of when my parents kind of cracked down and they really tried to instill into me the fact that school was important, for that I didn't really see it as something that was worth putting much effort into. I just kind of saw it as an opportunity to do something throughout the day, just get to know different people. But I didn't do well in school. I almost got held back first grade for social reasons and for academic reasons. And I remember when I was taking the third grade placement test for math, the teacher said something like, you can skip a question if you feel like you don't know the answer to it. I'm like, oh, I can just skip all the questions then because I don't really want to answer this test. And I ended up getting a 4% on that test. But up until then, that was... Grades up until third grade were, I mean, I was never a serious student really until then. And then after that, I had to kind of take it on myself to be a little bit more serious with it just because of different pressures that my parents were putting on me in terms of doing well. And I feel like since then, it's kind of continued now in a lot of ways.
You were mentioning a second ago that your parents would criticize you for having that negative voice.
Right.
And, you know, out of love, they didn't want you doing that to yourself. But would there be another way that they could have helped you through that?
I guess in hindsight, I can't really say much in terms of their outlook on things. But I guess it would have been nice just to kind of keep that in check for a little bit. I didn't really realize that what I was doing was wrong because I never knew why I was doing was wrong. To me, like at that age, I thought it was just them telling me to stop whining about things. And I never really thought about it in terms of just me being self-deprecating was harmful. And it took a really long time until I finally started realizing that. Back then, it was just something that was kind of a means of stability, sort of an anchor that would make me feel a little bit better whenever things were going on. But I guess in hindsight, I just kind of wish that my parents kind of just demanded me to respect myself. I mean, I don't really say demand, but kind of just give an explanation of why. Just even asking, like, Brian, like, why are you doing this? You're, like, for whatever reason.
What if they asked you what you're doing right? You know, what do you like about yourself? What are your strengths, Brian? Like, you know, it's okay to have weaknesses, too. What makes you wonderful?
I feel like they did do that a lot. It's just really hard because when I think back, I just don't remember a lot of those experiences. And I feel really bad for doing that because I mean, my parents are wonderful people. It's just really hard to kind of find those little moments in the past when there's so much of, I guess, the negative aspects that sort of govern that thought process. But I mean, I'm sure they did. It's just, I guess I'm just trying to think of a way in which it could have been phrased better.
You were saying like, they just said, stop talking the negative talk. So and then you had mentioned also that they would have said, why are you doing that? So it sounds more like it's a conversation that would have helped instead of just ordering or a command saying, don't do that. To say, well, what's going on? Why do you feel that way?
Right. Maybe you got the help of a therapist at that point.
Yeah,
To just help the conversation along.
Yeah, because getting to the reason why instead of just saying, don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's actually really interesting because from what my parents told me, I was actually psychologically tested at a very young age. And then it was actually really funny. There was a portion of the questionnaire that said depression, like, is this child depressed? And I guess my results are such that the person said, nope, this person is perfectly fine. And it was, it's such a strange like thing to think about looking back. I'm just trying to think about like how that could have happened. I guess I just didn't really understand what was going on at that
point. Anna, you have a I see you're ready to talk about this.
Yeah. There's a use for assessments, but I'm not a huge fan. I think they can really go poorly and actually give contraindicated results. And a lot of what I figure out about my clients happens in the relationship, happens in the room. Not after them filling out a form and see it on their face. I can feel it in their body language. And then I ask them about it. Yeah. So putting somebody in a room with a form that they might or might not understand, I'm just not a big fan.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, I might have looked happy while I was doing that. But at the same time, like, it's just, I just don't really know how there could have been such a disjoint. But at the same time, who knows? I mean, I guess I was kind of in a stage where I didn't really understand everything that was going on at that point. So.
Do you still get the feeling of isolation now?
I do.
You do?
Yeah.
What triggers that?
It's a variety of things. I mean, I feel like a lot of college students actually experience this at some point because you're in a very pivotal kind of stage of transition. You're kind of understanding what your purpose is in this life, what you want to be able to accomplish. And a lot of times, I mean, just based on late on conversations that I've had with some of my friends, just really just thinking about like your own internal purpose and like, why am I doing what I'm doing? And just a lot of those questions, when you just kind of take a step back and just think back to yourself, like, why am I doing what I'm doing? Like, why am I trying to basically do all these things to basically be able to help me in a career that may not even mean anything in the end? Because at the same time, is that really what's important? And just thinking about that kind of stuff, I feel, and just trying to really put into perspective your relationship to other people and just kind of thinking about, are these really relationships that I find meaningful? Like, do these people really understand me for me? And do they really appreciate me for me? Just thinking about that and just kind of looking at the disjoint between how you feel and how things may seem. It's a really interesting situation when you think about it, but I feel like these are the main triggers when it comes to feeling isolated, at least in my case.
I know that a lot of people are very overwhelmed by those questions. You know, what am I supposed to be when I grow up? Mm-hmm. I know people in their 40s still having the same suffering. It's a really big question. And, you know, I think a lot of people struggle with it. And I would say that, you know, isolation, it's just, it can happen anywhere from 6 years old through the high school, through college, and midlife.
Yeah. So in your opinion, why do you think that people feel isolated when they're surrounded by people who love them, friends who care for them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, to me, that's a really good question to be able to ask. And my best answer for that is because I feel like people don't necessarily feel heard all the time when they're in conversations. Like, you could be having a conversation with someone, you're like, yeah, I'm going through a really rough time, and like the person may see that as, oh, like this person's going through a really rough time, so I think it'll make them feel better if I tell them like the thing that I'm going through, and they just make it more about themselves and they don't really try to connect to the other person. And that's just one example of that, but I feel like there are other ways in which this thing sort of happens where the person just doesn't really feel heard. They don't really feel understood by people around them. And especially when it comes to like talking with someone that you quote unquote feel really close to, or like it's a really good friend, and this kind of thing sort of happens, like it can feel very, very isolating when it actually does happen. People don't really get you.
Yeah.
People don't understand like what it's like to be in your shoes.
I think people are too busy waiting for time so that they can respond, when it's really their time to listen to what the other person's really saying and listening between the lines. This is one thing that I call intuitive communication, because I think a lot of people think communication is just me opening my mouth and talking, but really it's about in listening. I think communication is more important, and it's that using intuition, like you were saying. If you're saying, I have a bad day, instead of saying, oh, let me tell you about my bad day, you listen between those lines and say, oh my gosh, like what's going on? And that's where you get the connection.
Well, and my advice too, if they could actually not only listen, but mirror back what they're hearing. Gosh, well, you're sad because of this and this and this. And then instead of fixing, ask the person, what are they going to do? And what do they think would be helpful for them? And, you know, just keep letting them talk and keep listening, and listening with your eyes, with your body, with your everything, so that they really feel heard. And, you know, even if you do have a suggestion that might be helpful for the person, save it for the next day. Because you want to give sort of a sacredness to that time and space of just really listening to them and letting them be heard before you have to insert whatever your advice is.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of parents, I mean, I think that's the whole Charlie Brown, the wah, 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 when the adults speak, is it does. It ends up, the kids think like that's all it is. It's just them talking with no feelings about their children.
Well, and a lot of the research indicates that really a lot of your work in advising and fixing ends by age 12. After age 12, what you have is a relationship where you're supposed to be providing support and empowering the child to now take the lessons that you've taught them and go and try them out and make mistakes and feel seen and heard and supported by you as they do that, as they explore that.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. That's
really awesome.
That's a really great point to bring up. And I really like what you said, Jacqueline, about the fact that a lot of times you can't always fix everything. And I feel like that's kind of a mentality that everyone has. Nobody likes to feel uncomfortable. And I feel like whenever people bring these things up, oh, I'm going through a rough time, or oh, things aren't necessarily going too great, that puts the other person in an uncomfortable situation. And the most natural thing to do is, oh, give advice, speak from my point of view. And a lot of that times it doesn't really work out that way.
Yeah.
It actually adds an extra layer of crap on top. I mean, if you think about a person who's going through a hard time, imagine that they are holding this ball of junk in their hands. Now, when you try to fix them, oh, you know, don't feel that way, blah, 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 all you do is add an extra layer of crap on top, versus just naming, wow, you're having a bad time.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Or sometimes I find parents will diminish what you're feeling.
Yeah.
It's not going to be that bad. It'll be better. Yeah, maybe 30 years from now where you guys are, but right now this is really bad for me. And I think that adds even more stress, because then now they're trying to explain themselves that it is bad.
Well, you're definitely not heard then if you're dismissed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, please try not to do that.
So you have networks of friends and support group. Was there a time where you felt connected, but then like isolated from them?
Yeah, that actually, I feel like that also kind of still happens to this day. And that's a lot of that's still my 6-year-old self, just kind of manifesting itself in different aspects of my life today. There are definitely still a lot of times when I feel like there are people around me, but I just don't feel like I can really relate to them or really connect with them. And I feel like this was actually the most significant, like throughout high school. And it, in a lot of ways, it's still continuing to this day. But I have wonderful friends. If I didn't have them to this day, I don't think I'd be here right now. But a lot of times, like, it's just something that I feel like I impose on myself a lot of times, just feeling like I can't really relate to a lot of things. And that's just because of whatever personal feelings I have going on, just feeling like I can't really communicate things in a way that people will be able to understand. Is your question more just like, was there ever a time when this has been going on, or just like a general thing?
Yeah, was there a time? Because I'm thinking like when you were younger, it was different. Mm-hmm. Is it getting worse or is it getting better?
It's really interesting to think about it, but I feel like it's actually kind of gotten to the point where it's a little bit harder to deal with, because When I went to college, I remember just going through a really rough time by the end of first semester. And there was a whole personal history behind this. And I feel like there were a lot of just different aspects going into it. But one of the biggest things was I was basically in a new place. I didn't really know anybody who was there. I basically tried to tell too much of myself at once, and some people got uncomfortable with it, and I ended up having to go through kind of like the administrative procedure for crisis and mental health, and that was kind of a really harrowing experience for me. That was kind of when I felt extremely isolated in terms of feeling alone at the school that I was at. And at the end of the day, I feel like people ended up referring me to resources out of good intentions, but just the feeling that I was kind of being shepherded off somewhere, it kind of made me feel like these people don't really want to make an effort to really listen. They just want to kind of take me to people who could better handle the situation. That's perfectly fine, but it's just hard for the person who's going for it to really go through it, because I remember being told at one point by people at the administration that I was talking to that I shouldn't be talking to my friends because I was making them uncomfortable. I should instead just talk to other people who are more professionally able to deal with this kind of stuff. I mean, there's a lot of things that I personally...
That seems counterintuitive to me. Anna?
I do believe that you do need to be careful with who you entrust with your deep thoughts and messages and things like that. But, you know, I'm really of the opposite school of thought, that really what we need to create in this world is much more safety in talking about what bothers us, and that everybody at some point in their life actually thinks of killing themselves. I mean, everybody will actually have that thought, but we don't want to talk about it. Oh, no, if we talk about it, it will create it. No, it doesn't. It does the opposite. Research shows that the more we do, the better this gets. And that it's part of being a human being that we are going to go through periods where we are stressed and depressed and struggling. And so, yeah, I feel very much the opposite. Like, maybe we create more safe spaces or groups for college students to come together and talk about how stressful it is to figure out what you're going to do with the rest of your life.
Right.
Like, you know, I almost feel like we need to go even younger, like junior high, because by the time you're hitting overload in college, it's like, wow, could we have given you guys a medium, a space to catch this earlier so that by the time it gets to college, it's not this bad?
Well, and not only through the school systems, but also in the homes, and supporting parents to understand how to make it safe to talk about emotions and that we all have them, and really helping everybody do this.
This is why I think that every parent should have to get a license and take class. Just like driver's license, become a parent, and you have to get ongoing. Like every 2-3 years, you got to have so many CEU units that you have to go take, because...
I can't tell you how many times in my master's degree that I sat there and thought to myself, oh my gosh, why didn't I know this sooner?
Yeah.
You know, and why is this information specially kept for clinical psychology? Like, it should be just as important as math and science and English, is to know how to be a human being in this world, deal with your emotions, and communicate with others.
Yeah. They don't teach you how to listen, to communicate in school. They don't teach you how to have interpersonal relationships with each other and yourself. It's just math, science, and sit there and memorize.
They don't tell you how much depression, you know, how much sadness is okay and how much is not okay, when you really need to seek help, you know, ways of managing your emotions.
We can go on this subject for a while.
Absolutely. I mean, I actually think it's a really interesting discussion to have, because I also feel like there are different institutions that are trying to implement this, but I feel like in the way that it happens, like, it's really, really hard. I'm sure that people will kind of feel opposed to this, that they feel like it's kind of being forced down their throats, and that may make people even feel more opposed to the idea, like, oh, like, why am I doing this? Like, I'm perfectly fine at doing this. And it's a really interesting situation when you try to implement this and see how it plays out. And it's a really, really difficult thing to really do and really pull it off. I think it's definitely something that is worth considering for the future. And I think it's a really great thing to think about in terms of finding the best way to be able to implement it.
So what advice or word of wisdom would you give to parents today?
The best words of advice that I could really give to parents today, just listen to your kids. I mean, even
it's simple.
Yeah, I mean, if I could really just boil it down, just listen to them. Even though they're young, and even though they may not have as much experience in the world, they still have a lot of wisdom in terms of their own experiences. And in a lot of situations, like, if they have something to say, then, like, especially if it's going on in their own life, then it's something that's meaningful. Even if you may think that they may not understand, then that may be a sign that you may need to be more open about the way that you think about things. Just always being able to be open and just being willing to consider new possibilities, new ways to think about the world, even if it may be from the lens of a six-year-old boy. I think that's something that's really important that a lot of people don't really understand.
Such wise words from a young adult that I don't find even...
I just want to remix it into a song. Listen.
Thanks. What advice or words of wisdom would you give to the teens, the kids in high school and junior high?
For students and teens who are feeling isolated right now, even though this may seem really cliche, you're not alone. I don't want to minimize any of the feelings that people are going through, but you are not alone and you are someone who's valued. And it may be difficult to be able to realize that in the place that you're at right now. It's just a matter of being able to find those right people, those right networks of support. And for a lot of people, it's a lot easier said than done. But I want to assure you that there is someone who values you. There is someone out there who cares about you, even if it's someone who you may not even know at that point. It's just a matter of just being able to be open, being able to expose yourself to new people, even if it may be uncomfortable. It's the most harmful thing, just from my own experience, was just being very quiet about a lot of things and just kind of feeling like I had to put on a face to please other people and just to make other people feel comfortable. And by default, that would make me feel comfortable. No, it's okay to be open about things. It's okay to talk about this kind of stuff, because if you don't start talking about these things, then who else is going to really be able to take on the conversation and be able to have that dialogue? If no one has those conversations, then the issue will never be discussed and people will kind of just be doing the same things over and over again. Be open. It's okay to be real about yourself. It's okay to really just talk about what you're going through. Even if it may seem like everything you're saying is falling on deaf ears, even if you may not realize it, there is always going to be someone who's listening.
Last new question. What's the greatest success you've experienced up to this point?
Greatest success I've ever experienced. I don't really know if I have a solid answer, but I feel like the one thing that I really find meaning it is my younger siblings. They're the people who really anchor me to who I am. They're the people who make me want to be someone who's want to keep achieving things and being able to strive towards higher things. Just all the really special memories that I've been able to have with them. They're the things that make me really proud to be an older sibling. They're someone who makes me feel really proud to be who I am. When I see them doing well in their things, when I see them just being able to succeed and thrive, those are probably the things that I find most meaningful for myself. And when I see people close to me succeeding, when I see them doing well in things, when I see my friends who I've known my entire life just accomplish great things, it just makes me so proud to be there with them and just being able to rejoice in what they're doing.
That's so great that he finds that that's his success.
Absolutely.
Experience, that it's about others. And that's what we're talking about, is opening up and really...
Well, majority of the studies on happiness are coming back to say exactly that happiness is in your connection to others. Mm-hmm. And in the moments that you share, when you really do feel the opposite of isolated, where you feel connected, that's where our true joy, lasting joy and quality joy comes from.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's awesome. Has anybody inspired you?
My high school teacher, who actually was the one who taught PACE, that class that was in charge of putting on the different assemblies. Is it okay to share his name?
Sure, of course.
Yeah, Rocky Wilson. He's one of my biggest inspirations to this day. He's really kind of helped me realize the kind of person that I'd like to become. I really want to be able to aspire to be like him. I mean, just his outlook on life is just so... It's something that I really connect with, and it's something that I really aspire to want to be. And when I first got to know him through this class, that it really just helped me just figure out a direction in terms of where I'm going to be going. And his wife is also a phenomenal human being. Mrs. Wilson, if you're listening to this, thank you so much. She was actually my sixth grade teacher, and she is someone who's really incredible.
It sounds like Rocky Wilson, if anything, you need to know you changed at least one life in this world.
Absolutely. Brian, can you just tell the listeners a little bit about what that class was that he had created?
Yes. Yeah. It was kind of like a student government sort of class. But what was interesting about that was that the focus was about creating more discussions in the student community about different issues like drugs, teen violence, depression, mental illness. It was about that kind of stuff. And I feel like that was really something that was important. There were a lot of really just great things that I was able to experience. I was able to meet Anna through that, because she was the one who spoke at our Red Ribbon Week presentation for that year. And I also had the chance to get to meet other people, other professionals in the community who are really focused around wellness, and people at Beach Cities Health District, people at Thelma McMillan. Those are all really great organizations that I was really able to connect with through PACE.
That's awesome. Sounds like this is an amazing program. Okay, well, thank you, listeners, for tuning in. We hope that you got some great, insightful things that you could implement in your home. And until next time, have a wonderful week. Thank you so much for joining us today. Go to parentpumpradio.com and click on the pink box on the top of our homepage to listen to our new and archived shows, which are featured on missionswithanSradio.org. To be instantly notified of new episodes, subscribe to our RSS feed. The RSS feed button is located at the top of the page where all our shows are featured on missionsradio.org. And after listening to the show, go to parentpumpradio.com or our Facebook page to leave your comments, questions, and topic suggestions. And while you're at our website, sign up to receive a free gift. Until next time, have a wonderful week.